I'm Lisa.
And I'm Jeff.
And you're listening to The Real Real Estate. Let's get into it. All right. So today we have four different stories. So we're going to start with, I'll let you decide which one you want to start with.
Okay.
We'll let you.
Oh, is it?
Okay. There we go. That's fine.
What was it reflecting?
Better. Yeah, it was like reflecting. I couldn't read the words. All right. So the first one that we're going to, or we potentially could start with, is my real estate broker in Florida is stealing leads.
That's never good.
A landlord is offering to sell us their home and also their holding paper. I've never bought a house before without an agent. Where do I start?
You should probably have an agent.
Okay. Always have an agent. An agent withheld a written offer from me and used it to negotiate behind my back. Is this legal / ethical?
Ooh, that's probably the one we should start with. That sounds very bad.
Yes. So we can start with that. The fourth one that we're going to do is, what do you do with a property that won't sell?
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Totally. Start with the worst of the worst. All right. So this has 237 upvotes, mm-hmm. and it was posted 8 days ago from someone with an appropriate name. that says, all right, Friday morning, I received an offer on my house for $405K. $405,000.
Okay.
That sounds better. With a $10,000 credit at closing, FHA loan contingently on the sale of the buyer's condo. My agent strongly advised me to counter ASAP rather than waiting 72 hours since the buyer. Simultaneously in negotiation with an all cash buyer with their condo. So we countered at 407 and all the other terms were the same. After submitting the offer, my agent spoke with their agent who said that 405 would work for the buyers, but they needed to figure out if their cash buyer was legit.
Okay.
I'm guessing there's no proof of funds.
Yeah, that sounds like an easy thing to request proof of funds on to see if it would work, but yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Saturday passes and we had not received a signed counter back. I'm under the impression that the buyers are confirming the status of their own sale before signing the condo. Shows active on the MLS still. Saturday afternoon, my agent texts that we'd received an offer from a second party for $385,000. His text said that the price was insulting and that the agent seemed inexperienced. I said that $385,000 was a decent starting and if we could please see the offer. He said the agent messed up on the DocuSign and put his name instead of mine on the signature line and deleted it. I asked about the terms, the loan type, the closing contingencies, and he responded that he deleted the offer before he could read that far.
What? Okay.
And reiterated that the offer was $12,000 lower and that the agent is going to be a pain to deal with. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
And then he said that the first party's buyer just signed the counter offer and that we were under contract for 407. I demanded to see the second offer, which he eventually forwarded. Conventionary loan, no sale contingency. I got him on the phone and he admitted that he had texted that to the first party's agent. And I told him that we had a second offer on the table and his client needed to sign immediately. Apparently their cash buyer might be flaking, so they had no other offers at this time, but they signed so they didn't miss out on my house. Have hope that their house will sell the next 35 days. This is extremely unethical to alert the first agent and over our second offer without presenting it to me first, running his strategy or even running that strategy by me. The second party may be willing to come up with a price closer and quickly, but I didn't even get the chance to negotiate. Can anyone confirm if my agent violated the laws or code of ethics? What are my options here? I signed a 6-month contract with this guy.
Yeah. And as far as options go, like whether it's an ethics violation or not, it sounds like there was some problems with the offer and, you know, whether the other agent was going to be hard to deal with or not is kind of a subjective thing, but it sounds like there genuinely were some problems with that other offer that they needed to straighten out before it became a genuine offer. So maybe, you know, I don't know that it's an ethics issue necessarily, but probably his advice to you should have been, hey, let's withdraw the counteroffer from the other one while we figure out what's going on with the second offer. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, then you would do a multiple counteroffer round. I would think that would be like the cleanest way to do that. But yeah, he didn't consult with you. He didn't consult with the seller at the right time, I think is kind of what happened there. But
yeah, I feel like with the agent though, by not even or saying that he deleted the offer and reiterated that that agent was going to be a pain to work with. Agents have brokers, and brokers manage even newer agents, older agents, inexperienced agents when they're active, you know, consistently or do it full time.
Right.
But to just refuse to send it, say that you deleted it, and then have to admit that you didn't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's
is like that is a little bit.
Yeah. It also seems like he's maybe protecting that first offer too. Like there was maybe something else going on in the background there that made that offer the more attractive one for him to work with, you know, regardless of the seller's best interest. So
commission's a little higher.
Maybe. Well,
I mean, it's not actually that much higher whenever you're looking at 25,000. That's like 20.
True. Yeah. That shouldn't have made that much of a difference. You're talking about $100 or $200 or something like that. But I don't know that it's weird that he played it that way. So, because if you've got a contingency for the sale of another property, obviously that's fairly likely that, you know, they might not get a buyer in the right amount of time and then it falls apart anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And since that cash buyer mm-hmm. might be flaking,
mm-hmm.
that seems very unfortunate.
Probably also fairly easy to salvage that by putting that second buyer in a backup position or negotiating them up as far as they'll go and then putting them in a backup position and having an offer already accepted on the property actually makes that process a little easier. So,
yeah.
You know, so realistically.
Yeah. I think overall, but.
Yeah.
I believe it is required that we have to present every offer.
That is true.
To the sellers.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's a little bit vague on like how we have to present it. Cause I think over the phone describing the terms also works. That vague text probably doesn't actually go all the way there, but yes, emailing it and then going over it with a phone call would be the correct procedure there, which.
Have you ever had an instance where you felt like taking, even if that one offer was lower and one offer was higher, but depending on the agent, it might be easier to.
Yeah, I've definitely had that feeling. Oh, totally. Yeah. But we try not to let that influence the decision-making process there too much. But yes, we all have relationships and, you know, personal quirks that it's like, I would rather have that offer, but
mm-hmm. yeah.
But again, it goes back to agency and like actually operating in the best interest of your client rather than yourself, which is, you know, what we try and always go back to.
Yeah. Do you think that he could pull out of that 6-month exclusive right buyer broker agreement?
You know, except the fact that he has an offer accepted, and if that offer doesn't fall apart, like, you know, that's probably the fastest way that he would sell that property. But yes, I would say with that chain of texts or whatever, I would think you could probably pull out of a contract if you contacted that agent's broker and be like, hey, this is what happened. I'm not super happy with it. I want to terminate the contract. More than likely, I think, you know, that would yeah. probably be grounds for terminating that again without.
Or the broker would step in place of the.
Agreed.
More likely the broker would probably step in.
Yeah. And then again, at that point, you'd have a choice as to whether you. I think you'd have a choice as to whether you wanted to continue in that situation. So,
yeah, I feel like most people on here are like, fire that agent immediately.
Right.
Which is fair that once you feel like you can't trust,
yeah.
like anyone just in general life, mm-hmm. it's kind of like,
yes,
that relationship, regardless of professional, real estate agent, any, mm-hmm. It's always going to be in the back of your mind that is this person actually doing something that's in working in my benefit, or is it pretty much just working in the back of their,
yeah, them yeah.
at the end of the day?
Right. As soon as you break that trust. Yeah. The client's looking for another agent anyway.
Yeah.
Whether the paperwork says so or not, there's yeah. The trust issue is huge.
100%.
Yeah.
Some people say I'm not a lawyer, but it would be unlikely to avoid that contract. Realtor's duty is to present all offers and ties to their license. It's not typical to include that in the contract terms. I don't think that's correct. I think that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is our duty to, you know, to show all offers,
mm-hmm.
not delete it. If your client asks you to see it, you have to send it.
Right. yeah, definitely that. Yeah, that definitely is a thing. I don't know why he would have said he deleted it, because obviously we never delete emails.
Never. We keep all emails.
That's right.
A lot of people are like, it's pretty hard to like mess up whenever you're in those. You know, we use AuthentiSign,
right.
DocuSign.
Yes. Yeah. Even if it was an email. Yeah. There's got to be, you know, the other agent would have a copy of it. They could resend it. You know, there's a lot of different ways to go there.
So. Yeah. All right.
Cool.
Moving on.
All right.
All right. Our next one is, my real estate broker is stealing leads. It has become evident that my broker I work under is stealing leads for me after I've established a relationship with them. Has anyone had this experience? And what was your course of action? Question mark. And this one had 41 upvotes. It's pretty popular. Okay. So.
Yeah, I would say I'd have to know a little bit more about what's going on, like how the leads were distributed, and like did the leads come from the broker, and like what kind of, you know, paperwork was in place in the background as far as like how the broker can assign those leads. So I might ask some questions along those lines. But yeah, generally, you know, technically all of the leads are owned by the broker, and it's the broker's responsibility to make sure that the leads are taken care of and the clients are taken care of. So take that into consideration. But yeah.
Yes. No, 100%. And especially since every lead is the supervising broker's lead. Mm-hmm. That is every deal that you make, listing, everything like that. Like if you quit a brokerage, the supervising broker is allowed to take, mm-hmm. you know, your listings or anything that you have under contract technically.
In most cases. Yeah. Again, there can be a termination document in there that says, you know, hey, if the listing's like not under contract and you're switching brokerages, maybe the agent or the broker lets you take that with you. Mm-hmm. But if it is under contract with the brokerage or something like that, maybe that you leave and you get a referral fee. Again, there's a lot more paperwork that goes into that. But again, regardless, it goes back to that trust issue. It's like, if you can't trust that the leads that you're working are going to be your sales, you probably don't want to be working at that brokerage would be my guess. But yeah, what were some of the comments on that?
I feel like one. So actually we have a realtor that works with us, and they actually had that experience with someone. And really at that point, you kind of have to just cut your losses. Mm-hmm. Like you might lose out on a little bit, but you weren't getting that money anyways, and just go find a different brokerage. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
It's easy to go interview new brokerages and, you know, see which one really truly fits you, and then just move on from that. Mm-hmm. 'Cause otherwise, you don't want to, you know, it is your job. We do this for, this is our career.
Right.
This is our livelihood. So.
And when you're working on commission, you definitely want that assurance that if you're doing a good job and everything's going well, that you're going to get paid well at the end of the transaction. So yeah.
Yeah. Everyone really agrees with us on this one. Some people said that they should turn them into the board. That might be,
Yeah, that's a tough call to make. I don't know that there's
anything that they can really do, because technically it is your supervising broker's.
Yeah, you'd have to have like a very good chain of evidence before you turn them into the board for that, you know, and you'd have to make sure that I always find that there's, you know, two sides to every story, and the truth usually lies somewhere in the middle.
That's definitely true.
And so I'm wondering if, you know, usually it's fairly hard for any agent to take a client away from someone else if that other agent is doing a good job. And so the fact that the broker even had the opportunity to talk to that client says maybe there was something else going on in the background, or, you know, maybe that client wasn't getting the information or the service that they needed there. But I don't, yeah.
Yeah. Again, I wish there was an update on this one.
Yeah.
There's not.
I have to send them a private message and be like, hey.
Yeah, why don't you explain the rest of this story?
Yeah, did you switch brokerages?
Yeah, there's a lot of people questioning. A lot of people are like, get new broker. But also it was like, why was your relationship not, you know, strong enough with your client that they felt it was okay to go to your broker and use them?
Right. And I know as a, you know, as a team leader or supervising broker, I know once in a while if I go into a listing appointment or something like that with a new agent, like it becomes very apparent very quickly that I'm the one there with the information. And mm-hmm. so the clients just start talking to me anyway. But again, I would never turn around and steal that listing from the from the new agent, I would just make sure that the new agent knew what they needed to do next rather than taking the listing. So yeah, so there's multiple things going on there, I think. But
and most of the time, I mean, brokers always get a cut of the, know, and if it's their lead, they get, you know, you get a bigger cut.
Right.
Because it's your lead. You pay for those leads or their leads that you brought in that, you know, you were generous enough. Generous enough to share with us. So I don't know. I feel like there's, quite a bit. Somebody put, welcome to the cutthroat world of real estate.
And real estate is fairly cutthroat, but hopefully not with you and the person that supervises you and helps you. There's, again, there's supposed to be that help factor there too, not the cutthroat factor.
So I feel like overall, just go get a new.
Yeah.
You're not working well with that broker, so you should probably just go get a new one.
Yeah. Shop around a little bit. Find one that genuinely supports you or that you feel supported at.
Mm-hmm. The next one is the landlord is offering to sell us their home and also their holding paper. I've never bought a house before without an agent. Where do I start?
Ooh, that sounds like a very bad situation. You know, owner financing, which is, I think holding paper is probably what they're referring to in owner financing there. Mm-hmm. That's always a sketchy situation. I've known lots of landlords. Well, I shouldn't say I've known them, but I've heard stories of lots of landlords that would intentionally try and sell the property. And so they get you to put down a certain amount down payment. You make a few payments, but they've written their contract in such a way that if you miss one, like you have, you know, 30 days to get out or something like that. And there's no way to recover your down payment. So I've seen that happen a couple of times, and it's kind of just preying on the least able to afford it. To be honest with you, that kind of just irks me at that point. But
Like they're like, give me, you know, this much down, and they scrounge to get all of that money down. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, we're going to keep your payment here. You only have a 3% interest rate.
Right.
But overall in 10 years, if you don't make one payment, you're done.
Yeah.
And I get the house back.
Or they'll set up like a balloon payment at the end of that. So it'll be like a, you know, 20-year amortization, but you actually only have like 5 years where you make the payment, and then you have to make that giant balloon payment or refinance or, you know, something else. And it's still allowed, but it seems like it's just setting that client up for, or that renter up for failure about 5 years down the road. So we don't encourage that at all. We recommend, you know, get the seller out of the picture as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Cause there's also that dynamic between you and the seller where it's like, whose house is it really? And you know, what happens if you repaint something or you remodel something and then, you know, it doesn't work out, you know, you're out all those funds that you've, and the effort that you've put in there. So.
Yeah. And also, if a seller wants to do seller financing, a lot of the time that means they still have probably a pretty big attachment to that home to some degree. They weren't willing to completely wipe their hands clean of it. Mm-hmm. They want their foot in the door at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So they should just rent it.
Yeah. The other thing that happens there is that if the seller has any loan on the property, that there's almost always a due on sale clause, which means if the ownership on the title changes, that loan is due immediately at that point. So more than likely they can't do that. But if they tried to do it, it would have to be like you were going to get your name on the deed at the end of the term. And if anything happens with the seller, like he stops making his payment or he gets behind on his taxes or something like that, the bank that he owes the money to could actually repossess the house. And then you would be out that as well. So yeah, right.
That would be a heartbreaking day.
Yes, exactly.
Unfortunately, that's probably been a very heartbreaking day for quite a few people.
Yes, which is why I don't. Yeah, I've had a couple of people approach me with that scenario, and I'm like, I am not writing that paperwork. I will write the paperwork if it's owned outright, and the buyer's name is going on the title that day, and the seller becomes a lien holder. I'm fine with that because you can put it in a long-term escrow account with another entity, which, again, I highly recommend. Don't let the seller be the only entity that reports those payments.
Yeah.
You want a third party that takes care of all of that.
So this does say that the seller did purchase the house in cash.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay. So
they do have full ownership of it with no payments.
That does take care of that part.
All right. So their story is we've been renting. Also, they've only been renting this house for 6 months.
Ah, okay. Okay.
We've been renting this house for about 6 months, and the owner approached us about buying it from them directly. They are offering their holding papers at a more favorable interest rate than the banks are offering. We are interested in buying and with the possibility of the financing as well, but without an agent on my side, I'm feeling a bit lost. How can I protect myself in the purchase? How can I ensure that the financing doesn't have some crazy clause that will burn us in at down the end, that will burn us down that down the road?
Okay.
I kept wanting to try to put the word end in there and it wasn't there. And how do I know that they won't change their mind about selling it after I pay for the inspection? All advice welcome. Edit one, we are located in the United States. Edit two, the sellers paid for the house in cash.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay. So in that scenario, I would say two things. You're actually going to, in that scenario, you actually want to get an agent who knows how that, how to do that paperwork for you. And secondly, you want an attorney to look over that, whatever paperwork they're offering you as far as the loan part. So, yeah.
So in the comments, pretty much everyone said is really on both sides. There should be either an agent. There should be an agent in there somewhere, mm-hmm. but also both sides should have a real estate attorney. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it costs in, you know, other states or anything close to that. One post says about $1,500 a person.
That seems very reasonable.
Yeah, that seems pretty reasonable for this area as well.
And if you have the contract in place, most buy-sells don't allow the seller to most contracts don't allow the seller to arbitrarily terminate that contract. So you could put it under contract, be secure in knowing that they do have to sell it to you, and then start paying for these other the other attorney's fees and inspection fees and stuff like that.
Yep. A big thing is to look, out for the words will, may, or whatever
before. I have never seen a contract with the word whatever, but I kind of want to.
Just the range, the microwave, or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, garbage disposal, I guess. Yeah.
You can do any maintenance you want or whatever.
Or whatever. Just get the deal done.
That's why I'm going to pay $300,000 or whatever at the end of this contract. Yeah, totally.
You know, just whatever works for you. Just throw it out there. This is actually a really good point too, is getting a realtor, if you're doing seller financing, and say that the realtor can do a CMA. Because should get an appraisal, because they could be like, well, I'm going to sell this to you for $100,000 more because you don't know what this house is worth.
Right.
And to make sure that you aren't buying a house that even if you went to go refinance and get a like an actual loan on it and not seller financing, and they're like, well, your house is only worth this and you need the money in that contract that's, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 more. Right. You're really stuck in a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of what you can and cannot do. You just you're going to lose a bunch of money or you have to come up with pretty significant payment.
And actually, along with that, you would want to make sure that that contract, whatever buy sell you had, had a clause for the appraisal. Mm-hmm. And then even though the seller's probably not going to require an appraisal, you want an appraisal for your information or a CMA, like you were talking about. Either one would probably work fine. You just want some establishment of value. Make sure that you're not overpaying for it.
Yeah. One person put, I did this once and I used the title company and they provided a monthly service for the billing. It works great for all of the above.
Yeah, that totally works. Actually, we run it through the title company as well. They have a separate wing that's called their long-term escrow wing and or department or whatever. And that's who you run it through. And they give you 1099s at the end of the year. They make sure that your payment got recorded as well. It's great. So,
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Do they do it with commercial too? Like commercial leases? Can you do it?
Not commercial leases necessarily.
But just seller financing?
Yeah, seller financing or just long-term escrow, whatever, you know, however you want to hold that. But yeah, you can totally do that.
Oh, probably for like investors and things like that as well. Whenever you're making, you have your promissory notes stuff.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I haven't worked very much with... Actually, I've never worked with seller financing.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah. And then, in like 500 transactions, I think... three of them have wound up in long-term escrow. So yeah, it's very rare.
That is very rare.
Yeah, very rare. Yep.
Okay. So this one is, what do you do with a property that won't sell? It has 81 upvotes, which is a decent amount.
I was going to say, it seems like we have this this conversation with our sellers all the time.
What's going to happen when my house doesn't sell? This one's a little bit worse. I feel once we read this story, but I feel like before we get into this story, there are cases where you do have to put money into your home to make it, you know, worth people wanting to even look at it.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. Or sometimes it's even like, you know, people buy a house and they don't factor in like enough for maintenance on that house over mm-hmm. the time that they own it. And I've seen that happen, unfortunately, quite a few times. So, yeah.
So this is a hard thing for a lot of sellers because people, you know, me too, you as well, like you built your home. Mm-hmm. So that probably holds a little bit more of a special place than mine where I'm like.
It totally does. But on the other side of it, I know some of the mistakes that I made that I would have to fix before I sold it.
Yeah. So it's like.
Yeah.
But sellers, not all sellers, but a lot of people, including myself, we all think that our property is worth a little bit more than it is.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Which everyone wants the most value once they're going to sell. Mm-hmm. But. For you, I mean, so you currently have a listing that we were talking about earlier today that,
yeah, you know. It's a little rough. It needs some maintenance. It needs somebody that can come in and, you know, put some effort into it, not mm-hmm. just, you know, not just live there. So, and it, you know, having said that, there's always a price that something will sell at. You know,
yes,
it's just a matter of getting there. And sometimes you can put in like a little bit of money and make a large return. And sometimes you can look at it and be like, you know what? I don't even have that amount of money. And you do have to just take the loss at that point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yes, there's, and again, there's probably a little bit more to this story here, but there's also like, there's levels of, so there's like, I would say, I would put it into several different categories as to like how much you have to actually fix it up. Because there can be unfinanceable where no one can get a loan to purchase your property.
Yes.
So that's obviously like the lowest level. That's the hardest to sell. And then above that, you have the financeable, but not attractive. And then we wind up in that category a lot. Yes. So,
I had clients back a couple years ago and this was the most unique property I've ever been to. You actually came with me on this showing. Okay. There was a house, everything was do it yourself, but it was the kitchen floor was a different height. There was considered a bedroom that was an addition. And then there was a secondary building. I think, you know, it says in the big letters, it says hot on the front of it.
Oh man, I'm totally drawing a blank on
this
one.
It's over by the dump in that area. Or not the dump, landfill, I guess.
Oh yeah, gotcha. Okay.
And we walked in. So the seller was trying to sell this because he wanted to build a house next door that was probably a little bit more functional.
Right.
But he actually never sold it because.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. We went there and I was a newer agent at the time. Mm-hmm. And you were like, there's no one's financing. Right. And they were looking at a first time home buyer mm-hmm. with, you know, help from the state.
Yeah. And you can find Yeah, you can find buyers that are totally willing to take on a project and do that, and the bank just will be like, nope, we're not lending money on that. So, yeah, it's kind of...
That was definitely
yeah.
100% one of those projects.
Right.
That.
Yeah.
But no, he actually never sold it, so okay. I don't know.
And that's probably a good reason why. I mean, it just doesn't work, you know? Or sometimes people will build things that are so specific to them that everybody else is like, whoa, that is a lot of money that I'm going to have to depersonalize that property to make it usable for me, you know. So
there's a house I showed this to a different client. Mm-hmm. I mean, the house was really cool inside.
Yeah.
But he was a custom tile and did art designs with tile.
Yes.
And that's beautiful. And it was really cool. But this house was built so custom to this seller's taste that the entire house was mm-hmm. decorated in different tile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From the kitchen to the bathroom to the floors to the walls to like reading nooks up on the ceiling with skylights. And it was really pretty. But even like, you know, my buyers come in and they're like, it's not that we don't love it. It's just this isn't our full taste.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to tear that much tile
really hard.
More than the house.
Yeah, I showed one time where they had taken like their kitchen and their dining room, and I guess these people had like, I don't know if they did like cooking classes or they had like parties where they fed a lot of people, but they had taken their entire kitchen and dining room and they made like a series of three countertops. So it was almost like, you walked in and there was a countertop here and there's a countertop in front of you and another one in front of that. And then the L-shaped kitchen. And you know, if you wanted to eat at a countertop, that was great, but there was no place for a dining room table and you had to eat in like this, almost like this classroom setting or like think like high school chemistry lab. That's just exactly what it was.
Boom, boom, yeah. Boom. You can't sit with us.
Right. Exactly. And each one of them had
bizarre.
They had like a sink in the middle of each one of them. And it was, like I said, it was very specifically set up for something. We never found out what it was, but
I wonder if it was like they did do like cooking classes.
Yeah. Something. Anyway, they had spent a ton of money remodeling their kitchen to look like that.
Also, you can't just rip those out. Like now you have like holes in your flooring, so you have to redo all your flooring. Like you have piping running through your floors.
Plumbing, electrical, all that. Yeah. Anyway, yes. So don't over-customize your house. Unless you're going to live there forever.
Forever. Yeah, that's the hard thing is with customizing things to a degree. Yes. Trends go out of style every few years. Mm-hmm. Every
10 years max.
Max. Yeah. If you're planning on selling it, kind of keep your house a little bit of a blank space where someone can envision what they want to do with the house as their forever home, especially if you know that's not your forever home. Mm-hmm.
And if you do those super custom, super custom things where it's just customized to you, know that that doesn't add value and you're going to have to take that back out or you're going to have to, price it appropriately so that somebody can take that back out. The standard 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath, that house sells all day long.
Mm-hmm. Everybody wants that size.
You can customize it, but just know you might not add value. So,
yeah. Customizing, you can add like a bigger porch or things like that. And, mm-hmm. If you want to put a hot tub, those don't always convey. Sometimes they do. Some buyers want them. A lot of buyers don't lately.
That's very true too.
Turn your garage into a bedroom.
Yes. More or less. That's always a weird one. It does add square footage, but not in a good way. And it never turns out well.
No, and the insulation's not near as good. And it just usually turns in.
Yeah. What was the rest of the story on that one?
Okay. Oh yeah. We're going to the story.
Off track. That's all right.
Okay. So the story is my mother-in-law didn't want the family cottage and dumped it on me and my wife. It's falling apart and we've been trying to sell it for years. My wife and I have been unsuccessful trying to sell this property for years. We accepted an offer a couple of years ago, but it fell through due to the issues with the title. Long story short, the title agency wouldn't sign off because they wanted my wife's uncle, who has no claim to the property, to sign off on the quitclaim deed, and he refused.
Ah, there's a cloud on the title.
Yeah, that's over.
Okay. So
we received a cash offer from someone, even though the property wasn't even currently listed. That deal fell apart as well due to the inspection. We learned a lot of really unfortunate stuff about the property. There's no foundation. We thought there was a foundation. It was just in bad shape. The septic tank is unfunctionable due to tree roots. The chimney has damage, and at some point it has been leaking, causing water damage. Apparently, there is no insulation in the large part of the house. The flooring is rotting, etc. All in all, we were told that it's probably cost us a ballpark of $100,000 to get the place in sellable condition. Furthermore, the property site is close to a beautiful lake, and it's not illegal to tear down the existing home and rebuild.
That sounds like exactly what they should do.
Uh-huh. Yep. I think you should tear that down and sell that land to somebody for a lot less money.
Or at least ask the realtor, like if you have a realtor involved, ask them, hey, what's the value of the land if it was just a clear lot, because I'm guessing if it had a structure on there, they can rebuild the structure. So yeah, what's the value of a build lot next to the lake? That seems like a great option.
Yes. It does seem like a really great option. So this house has been in their family for generations since the 1940s. Mm-hmm. They're definitely, they just built it on dirt and then just poured flooring inside. Like that's.
Well, they used to do that, or they would stack up rocks and run their footers on top of that. Yeah, and then eventually the rocks kind of, they don't deteriorate, but they kind of move around and it's it's called, I can't remember what it's called, like a stucco and rubble or something like that foundation.
Oh yeah. I think there's a couple over.
Yes. Yeah.
That was actually became a problem for another realtor here.
Mm-hmm. At one point. Yeah. There are some in the area that do have that problem.
I just, it's like, just tear the house. I feel like if they tear it down, it's going to cost them. People love recycled wood.
True. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, the house was built in the 40s. So that's, I mean, that's going on, you know, mm-hmm. 80 years.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's actually impressive that without a foundation, it lasted that long.
Yeah. But so, I mean, and it sounds like they didn't exactly take very good care of it just in the mm-hmm. beginning.
Sometimes people do like that cottage look too, where maybe, you know, again, it might be a good time to talk to the realtor and be like, hey, if we drop $100,000 on this thing, you know, what's the value versus the lot? And just have that, just a value conversation and be like, you know, what's the most efficient use of our resources here?
So they dropped the price half of what it was, and then they took another $100,000 off. What are they trying to sell this for?
Yeah, right. So they cut it in half and took $100,000.
And then accepted an offer that was $100,000 off of that offer, and the buyer still backed out.
Okay.
They're like, this is 6 cents. They're just like,
right. Okay. Huh. That is really interesting. So that tells me that they were just like way, I mean, cottage on the lake does kind of, you know, make you think that it probably was pretty valuable, but yeah, if they cut the price in half and took one, that's $100,000 less.
It sounds like more or less like this house is, the property is going to have to be cash. And if someone's trying to finance it, even mm-hmm. if they drop the price to, you know, three, say, yeah. I don't know exactly what the price of it is, but say that they dropped it, you know, it was 400,000. They
dropped it to two,
took $100,000 off for like damages. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to buy that, I don't know if a conventional loan would even qualify. VA definitely wouldn't, and a first-time home buyer definitely wouldn't.
Yeah.
But I can't even imagine a conventional loan's going to go in there with no foundation.
No, conventional definitely won't either. It'd have to be some kind of in-house. It'd be almost like a construction loan, probably.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody to come in and do that. So, yeah, or some kind of in-house financing. Yeah, it sounds like they genuinely need to. Well, I guess you could check the price of, like, jacking the house up, putting a foundation under it to start with, and that would actually potentially get it closer to financing anyway.
You could sell the whole thing to a historical museum and they'll come pick it up for you, solve your problems.
Yeah.
They can use it in a museum and put, you know,
put it inside of another building.
Yeah. Put fake little people in it with their sewing kits.
Right. There you go. Sell it as
blacksmith.
Sell it as a movie prop. That's
yeah.
There you go.
Sell it as a movie prop. And then just sell the land.
And at some point you're going to see a haunted, you know, some kind of haunted, haunted mansion type film that's, it's going to wind up in.
Yep.
Cool.
Also, if they're listing it with a realtor, I'm actually surprised that the realtor isn't listing it as just land. Because we, especially in our area, we have a lot of very old, mm-hmm. old houses and buildings, and we like, the agents normally will list it just as land and mm-hmm. be like, there is a physical structure on the property. Please don't go in it. It is unsafe for you, you know, right. for you and your clients to be inside of there, and kind of leave it at that. Is, you know, the sellers a lot of the time will offer to clear the, like mm-hmm. the property off. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure how much it's worth it. But depending on what land is worth in your area, I guess. But
yeah, exactly.
So overall, like, I feel like just listing it as land, and that can just be like a surprise.
Right. Or you could do a multiple listing thing too, where you could yeah. just say, hey, you know, it's a house, it's a single family house, but then also list it as land with a structure and just see which one, who bites on what first, or list it as a development opportunity or something. So yeah
because I mean, I wonder how big, they never say how big the lot actually is, because yeah, if you could tear that down and build, everyone loves tiny homes nowadays,
right?
You know, put like a couple, like three, make them Airbnbs. I'm not mm-hmm. sure what their permits there are mm-hmm. on that lake, but either way, I mean, I feel like it'd be worth almost keeping the property, tearing it down, and then putting something that you want.
Right.
There.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my thought too. It'll just be like, oh, well, if you're looking at putting $100,000 into it anyway, can you go get a construction loan and, you know, do it nice? And, you know, even if you remove the structure and then build something else there.
Yeah.
But regardless, if a house won't sell, you know, it's always price.
It's always price.
There is
it
always
sounds like
price.
In this one it doesn't even
Yeah, maybe dropping it.
It doesn't even matter what the price is.
Maybe not. Well, the cloud on the title is a genuine concern, too, because if you can't get title insurance, which is what they said there, you're not going to get any kind of financing on it at all. And even if someone buys it, they don't have guarantee that they have an unrestricted deed, basically. So mm-hmm. having that uncle who, I would guess, even though he has no claim on it, I would guess that maybe he was mentioned in a will or something like that. And so they just need him to sign something that says, hey, I'm not interested in that property anymore.
I mean, there isn't also part of that second edit mentioned below that the uncle is currently serving time in a state penitentiary.
Ah, okay. That always adds an extra layer to it. But again, taking a document to him, usually legal documents.
For violent crimes.
Yeah.
So who knows? Honestly, I don't know if I even know this or even asked. So if someone goes to prison, say this is really off topic. Like this has nothing to do with this particular. Mm-hmm. Actually, if someone owns a home and goes to prison for a life sentence. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the house could go into foreclosure, but do they even have a right to try to stay on the deed of that home?
They have a right to stay on the deed of that home. And we have actually sold one property where we had to go down to the jail to get the guy to sign the paperwork. And and as long as there isn't some kind of financial fine, because obviously if his name's on the deed and it's part of his assets, if the county or the, thing that he did wrong, if they have a right to see some of his assets, then they might have a lien against that property as well.
Like if he had a massive fine.
Right, exactly. So there could be some of that going on.
Or restitution or something like that he owed someone.
Right, exactly. But no, you can sell property while you're in prison. So,
you know, for newer agents, that could be your tactic. Your
tip of the day.
Hit the prison inmates. No, I'm just kidding. Quick sells all day long.
I don't know if that's really...
That would be a terrible, terrible way to go about that.
You hang out in the prison waiting room. It's like, do you need to sell any property?
Murder house, 101.
Yeah, you're going to wind up selling a lot of weird houses.
Yeah, there's a lot of... would be bad. Sage everything, if that's what you believe in.
That's a really good one. That's hilarious.
That would be...
That is the niche market that I have not tapped.
I wonder if anyone actually has gone down that, goes to huge, big crime cases, or even you see a lot of embezzlement, things like that, where it's like, I need to sell my house prior to my court case where they're going to take everything from, they're going to seize my assets. So I need to move this money. Now we're just getting into conspiracy.
Right.
Which is not anything that I would suggest to anyone, but.
I think generally, again, I'm not an attorney or whatever, but I think generally once the charges have been filed and everything's going down, there's a freeze on it. At least until things get resolved, I think there's actually a thing where you can, I've run into this a couple of times. It's called a list pendants. And if it goes on the property, it cannot be sold until that is released. And the place that I've dealt with it is one person feels like they get left out of a will and there's an asset that needs to be sold. They will immediately throw that on there, and they may or may not have a right to some of the assets, but they still have thrown that on there, and you can't sell it without having that either released by a judge or some kind of settlement happening there. So
that person is petty.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I actually spent 6 months last spring waiting on somebody to get that resolved, and it didn't happen. Ooh. So yeah.
Didn't that happen with an acre that my buyers bought, but another agent in the office listed it? They ended up having to pull a mobile home off of it, but the family was really in a debate on the seller side about who was...
What was that?
Supposed to...
They took the trailer house somewhere and they had to bring it back, right?
Burned the trailer house. Didn't they get a permit and burn the trailer? Did they burn it on the property and then remove all of the...
Maybe. I can't remember what happened on that one.
Yeah, that was a wild one too.
I was going to have to go back and look at that one.
All the stories that people don't know.
Yeah. The one that I was thinking of was, there's a trailer house in a trailer park on a rented lot, and they moved it to their in-laws place, got into a fight with their in-laws. Their in-laws said, you have 30 days to get that out of here. Like a year later, they went back and put it back in the same spot where it had been, because that was the only place that was open around here. And so then we had to resell it there again.
Oh my gosh.
So that was a weird one, but yeah.
This was an acre. We did the water test for it there, the septic. It was actually part of a subdivision, but it wasn't even close to the subdivision. It was out
by the airport or on.
Over by the airport. That one. And I think they did burn that trailer with a permit from.
I think you're right. I think they did.
And the fire department was out there, and they actually made it quite a.
Party. That house was in bad shape because I looked at it before they burned it.
Oh yeah.
Yes, that's right. So I looked at it before they burned it. We basically just said, hey, you know, it just needs to go away. We just got to get this off here. We're going to sell it as a lot. And then your clients bought it, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. That's what it was. Yes.
That was a good time.
And I saw it was for sale again for like $700,000 or something like that.
It was originally listed for like $8,000. Yeah. Never sold.
It didn't. No.
No. Yeah. So I don't really know what happened there. Because they never even did anything with it.
No. No, I think they parked their camper on it for a while. And then,
yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know. So. Cool. But you know, that's just
Yep.
It goes sometimes.
That is real estate.
So people do burn their trailer homes down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually that
is actually more common to make the lot empty.
Actually,
fire departments will actually come out and do a permit for it.
Yeah.
So it's a controlled burn.
You do have to remove like all the toxic stuff from inside. So like appliances and stuff like that. You do have to get that out of there.
Yeah.
I actually did that with my trailer house before I built my house. I didn't burn it, but I took my Bobcat with a claw on the front of it and I just literally chewed it up and threw it away.
That would be such a satisfying feeling. Right. Just be like, I love this. Yeah.
Yep. I drove my Bobcat right through my living room.
Chewed it up. Biggest smile ever. Just woo.
Yeah. My son was on my lap. Actually, we just drove right there. It was awesome.
I would love to do that someday.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. And if you want to submit any of your own stories to The Real Real Estate on Reddit, or you can email us at therealrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you next time. Thanks. Bye.